We are quickly approaching the end of 2024. And if you have not purchased an investment property yet this year, and it's been one of your goals, I need you to listen very closely. I know many of you live in areas where it's so expensive and investment properties seem impossible. I'm talking about some of the big cities. So LA, New York City, maybe even Seattle, Atlanta, places in Florida, and the list goes on. If you know that where you live is too expensive, I need you to lock in right now. Investing out of state changed my life as somebody living in California. I now invest in Ohio and I'm growing my portfolio. It's something that's possible. You just need the right information and execution. So if that's you, if you want to learn how to invest out of state, go to outofstatemoney.com and there is a free training that'll outline the steps for you and help you understand exactly what it takes. So go to outofstatemoney.com or simply go to the link in the description of this episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, Episode 4. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Just want to thank everyone who's tuned in so far, everyone who's shown love on Instagram and who has hit me up regarding the podcast. I definitely appreciate it. Quick update on my property in Dayton. A tenant has moved in and I got set up on their property management software. So I was able to see the financials so far, the security deposit, rent, all those things. It's actually a pet fee. So the rent will be about 50 bucks more, which is nice. And looking forward to seeing how this ride goes. Only took about 2 weeks to find someone. Definitely looking forward to seeing how this goes and we'll keep you all updated. Very excited about this episode with Kendra Barnes. She retired from the 9-to-5 life at 32. So definitely a lot of great nuggets and principles we can learn that can be applied to our own real estate journeys. Also, shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. They just did a rebrand of their website, and you can become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. If you're a young minority professional looking to network with others, you definitely want to join this early on. You can also follow them on IG at mint_inc. Also want to make a plug for a couple of resources in our link tree. So first, the Rental Property 90-Day Action Plan by our guest, Kendra Barnes. I purchased this guide. It's an excellent resource. It will let you know exactly what you need to do on the path to purchasing a property and will keep you organized. It's also self-paced, so you can adjust it to your specific needs. You can get it for $10 using the code TAKEACTION. And you can also follow Kendra at The Key Resource on Instagram. And another resource from Kendra is the Buy and Hold Bootcamp. So the Buy and Hold Bootcamp is perfect for the person who knows they want to buy rental properties and become a landlord and wants expert guidance as they start the process so they don't make expensive mistakes. It's a six-week coaching program that includes a whole lot. You can find out more from Kendra at The Key Resource on Instagram. Lastly, Hey New Landlord by Gabrielle Martin. She'll be one of our guests on an upcoming show. This guide is for anyone who wants to house hack, which means to live in one unit and rent the others out. Everything you need to know as a first-time landlord is in this guide, and you can follow Gabrielle at Invest and Chill. Thank you all again. Looking forward to a great episode. Awesome. Well, welcome everyone to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Here with me today, I have Kendra Barnes, who's the founder of The Key Resource. She retired from the 9-to-5 life at age 32. She's been featured in Forbes, in Black Enterprise, and she's doing a lot of great things in the real estate game. So very excited to learn more about her story today. Kendra, thank you again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So first, tell us more about what your childhood was like. What did you see or what didn't you see that shaped your view of building wealth?
So I grew up in a military household. Both my parents were in the military. We were a middle class household. No one in my family invested in real estate. So it wasn't something I saw growing up at all. And I really never thought about wealth building. So we weren't poor. I never wanted for anything, but the idea of building wealth was not really talked about. But I always like had that entrepreneurial spirit as a kid, and my parents really fostered that in me. They gave me an allowance. They taught me how to save, taught me how to make my money grow. As far as like, you know, I had like a little store I set up in our house. So when my aunts and uncles would come over, I would literally like buy candy and sell it to them, or like rent out my parents' DVDs and things like that. So how much money do I need to go to the store and make sure I make a profit off the candy, things like that. But as far as investing, that conversation was never there. So that was something I had to kind of stumble upon on my own.
Got it. I definitely know what the candy life is like. It's something I did in high school. So it's good. You had kind of had that business mentality from a young age. But it's interesting. It's interesting. One thing I do want to highlight there is that a lot of people, especially in our community, feel that everyone who is successful in real estate or otherwise, they kind of had a silver spoon or had a roadmap. And it's obviously not true. You know, you had a good upbringing and pretty normal. But as you mentioned, building wealth, it wasn't a conversation at the dinner table, if you will. So I think that's very, very powerful. And why did you decide to get into real estate?
I just want to piggyback off that point you made about silver spoon. Like, not only did I not grow up like with tons of money, I didn't come into some major inheritance. I did not win the lottery. I also graduated from graduate school with like $0 to my name. I was never a good saver. I was that person in college who was literally swiping all the time, running up my credit cards. I was literally just living for a moment because, like I said, no one had ever sat me down and said, look, this is what your credit score and this is what all this debt is going to do for you in the future. This is how it follows you. So I was just living, you know. And so what happened was my husband and I, we had bought a house for ourselves at the time, and we were just kind of coasting. We'd done it, right? We're living the American dream. We owned a home, worked our government jobs, and we were going to do that until we retired, right? Until we were like 79 or 85 or whatever the retirement age would have come up to be. We played this game called cash flow. I don't know. Have you played cash flow before?
I've heard of it, but I've never purchased it. I've never played it before.
It's so fun. I think you would really like it. So it's basically, it mimics life. You get a career, you have a salary, you might have kids, you might have student loans, you have all these different expenses. And you're kind of going around this hamster wheel of life. You're just paying bills, you're living paycheck to paycheck, and you have to make smart investments to win the game. So the only way you can win cash flow is if you invest in real estate. You can invest in stocks too. So investing in stocks gives you that money that allows you to invest in real estate. You go, you start doing small deals in real estate, it leads you to the bigger deals in real estate. And that's literally the only way you can win. And we had so much fun playing this game randomly one day. And we kind of walked away from it saying like, okay, if the only way to win this game is to invest in real estate and this game mimics life, why aren't we investing in real estate in real life? Like, you know, and it just kind of gave us this wake up call. And we just got really curious and just dove right in, you know, with no guidance, no idea what we were doing. And we got addicted. That's the thing about real estate. Like, once you get started and once you see that you can do it, it is so addicting.
Absolutely. Definitely. So tell us about your first deal.
So we played that game on a Saturday, and we started looking for our first property the next day. Like, literally, we were out there Googling, looking at Redfin, Zillow, all these different places. And about 3 months later, we bought a duplex. Like I said, we had no idea what we were doing. We weren't even saving up for this. Like, we weren't even preparing. And so what we ended up doing to buy this duplex, because we did not know any better, was we actually borrowed the money for the down payment from our retirement accounts, which a lot of financial gurus will tell you is a bad idea. But I'll say this, it really depends on your specific situation. It worked out for us, but I would suggest anyone listening to this, if you are planning on borrowing from your retirement for anything, please make sure you consult with a financial advisor. We did not. We did not. So we borrowed that money from our retirement. Thankfully, that money, by investing it in that duplex, it's made us way more money than it was making in that retirement account. But that's not going to be the case for everybody. So we found the duplex. It had one tenant in one side. The other side was empty. And we're like, cool. So I think the tenant was paying like maybe $1,100 a month. And the mortgage was $1,085. So we're like, cool. We'll be able to cover the mortgage with what this tenant is paying. And while we're getting that income in, we'll go ahead and renovate the other side and kind of slow roll it, bootstrap it, do it ourselves. We'll be good. And we'll get a tenant in the other side. So what happened was about a week after we got the keys for that duplex, and we had this plan in our heads, like we're good to go. The tenant who was already living there just up and left. Like he just moved out.
What?
And we were like, wait a minute. Like, how do we even find tenants? We didn't even know. Like, we had jumped into this thing so fast.
Yeah.
We really didn't even know what to do next. And so it actually set us up for one of the best decisions we've ever made as far as, like, that duplex. We were forced to put it on Airbnb because we needed to bring in money fast. And that was the quickest thing we could think of. And wow. Thankfully, that decision made us so much money. You know, using Airbnb. So that's like a little background on our first deal.
Wow. Wow. And that was in the DC area. Is that right?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I forgot to say. So, my rentals are in DC and Maryland. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And what were, a couple follow-up questions on that. That's an awesome, awesome story. One, I really like the fact that y'all took action. You know, you played the game and you're like, let's start researching and let's do this. So I really like the fact that you took action. Obviously you learned along the way, but the biggest thing is that you took action. And I feel like a lot of people get stuck in, what is it? Analysis paralysis and, you know, kind of research for three, four, 5 years and all these deals pass them by. So I think it's great that y'all got in the game where you could, and then just figured it out afterwards. So that was, that's,
the thing I think that really gets people stuck today is that back then, so that was like 5-6 years ago, people, especially Black people, weren't really on Instagram, like showing they were out there doing this, like me and all the other people you see, these like millennials you see these days on Instagram, and everyone has these courses and ebooks and all this stuff. That wasn't out back then. The only thing I knew about back then was maybe those little spammy real estate seminars you hear about on the radio. Old like white people kind of thing. And so I think now the access to information does get people stuck because they're consuming so much they feel like, okay, I have to get that one more thing before I get started. But really getting started will be your best teacher. I think you should educate yourself, definitely learn from the mistakes of people like me. That's why I do what I do now. That's why I'm here chatting with you. That's why I create the products that I create, but also like get started too. Like don't just keep consuming information.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what was the purchase price on that duplex?
It was $228,000. The down payment was, I think it was $57,000. And it's like, who has $57,000, like, just lying around? and so that's why we had to borrow that from our retirement. But what I would have done if I had known better was we would have actually house hacked that duplex and put down, like, $8,000 instead of $57,000.
Right, right. Definitely. Definitely. And so what ended up happening after – so you did the Airbnb while renovating the other unit. What ended up happening? Did you stay with the Airbnb strategy for that duplex, or did you eventually get two long-term tenants in there?
So we did Airbnb for a while, and then we had one long-term tenant and then did Airbnb out of one unit. So with our rentals, we always take a very like diversified approach because we don't want to put all our eggs in one basket. Like for instance, we do Section 8, we do Airbnb. Like with Airbnb, you can get pretty much double what you would get from a regular tenant, a long-term tenant, but Airbnb is more high maintenance. With Section 8, you're getting that money every month, pretty much no matter what, from the government, right? So that's a good stream of income to have. So it's just good to kind of diversify. But yeah, we did Airbnb and long-term in that duplex.
Definitely, definitely. So with the Airbnb and long-term, what would you say the estimated cash flow is on that duplex?
So right now we actually have two long-term tenants in it. But when we were doing Airbnb, we were making about $3,000 a month just on one unit.
Wow.
And yeah, and the mortgage was about, like I said, I think it's $1,085 a month. And then the market rent for the long-term tenant back then, I think it was $1,100. Mm-hmm. So we were making pretty good money doing Airbnb, doing it like that.
Definitely, definitely. And has the value of that home stayed pretty stable, or has it increased since then? I've heard a lot of cool things about the DC market. So I'm just curious as to what the value is compared to when you first bought it.
No, it's definitely gone up. DC is gentrifying like crazy. The thing about this property is that it is or was or whatever, it's in the hood, right?
Yeah.
Thing about the hood in DC and a lot of cities you'll see is the hood is not going to be hood for long. And, and this is the thing about it. Like, I think we as Black people shy away from investing in these neighborhoods. We're always so scared. But if we do not invest in them, somebody else will. And people that are, outside of the Black community see the value and they're able to really capitalize on it. So we had the foresight. We have two properties in that neighborhood. And now the values have like skyrocketed because we were able to wait it out.
Definitely, definitely. And I want to touch on that a bit. Is all these forums and all over the place, you hear people talking about, war zones and the hood, all these places where Black people live. And I feel like, and I think I've seen posts thinking similarly, I feel like it's by design, because at the end of the day, somebody's going to make money in the hood. Someone's going to buy it, rent it out, do whatever they want with it, and make money. And it may very well be the people who are saying not to buy there. So I agree with you, and I really want to shout out the foresight that you two had and invested in your community. And now, it paid off back then, and I'm sure it's paying off now. So can you talk more about the misconceptions people have about investing in our communities and why we should not, why we shouldn't run away from our communities and we should put our dollars there?
So I hate the war zone term because it is so misleading. Like, literally think about what a war zone is. Like, that's an active war environment. Is that really what Black neighborhoods are? No. If you walk down the street in any typical Black neighborhood, you're not really going to be in any imminent danger on most days. So I really, really hate that term. And like you said, the people who are saying that usually do invest in those neighborhoods. And I think it is a way to kind of dissuade others to do that so they can keep making those gains. I really think that we as Black people need to rethink being afraid to invest in our own communities. We are so capable, and we are we're just really capable, and we should be the ones investing in and bringing our communities back into the fold.
Absolutely. So you had your primary residence, you had the duplex. How did things grow from there, and how many doors do you have now?
So we have 8 doors, and that's one thing I tell people all the time. Like, we retired, my husband and I both retired, and people think like, oh, we must own like 20, 30, 40 doors. No, for us, it only took 8, and that's going to be different for everybody. 8 doors in DC is very different from 8 doors in Detroit, very different from 8 doors in LA. What I'm saying? So it just depends on where you are. But so after we bought that duplex, we learned about house hacking, which, if you don't know what house hacking is, if you're listening to this, it's when you buy a multi-unit property, you live in one unit and you rent out the other units. So it's essentially a way to live for free because your tenants are paying your mortgage. You get a much lower down payment by living in the property. So with that duplex we bought, we put down $57,000. If we would have just lived in one unit for 1 year, we would have only had to put down $8,000. Mm. or even less maybe, because when you house hack, you can get down payment grants and assistance and things like that. So we could have literally put down less than $8,000. But after that duplex, we learned about house hacking and we ended up house hacking a fourplex. And after that, we bought our condo cash. So we've used loans, we've used cash to buy, but it just kind of just snowballed from there.
Definitely, definitely. And did you, for the second property, did you use FHA? Did you put down 20% again? I'm sorry if I missed that.
Oh, no. We did use FHA and put down 3.5%. And we honestly would have never been able to afford the property if not for FHA and putting down 3.5. We would have never been able to afford it if it wasn't for how they calculate your income when you are buying a multi-unit. So basically, they factor in how much you're going to make with this multi-unit when they're approving you for the mortgage. So not only are they looking at your current income, they're like, okay, we're also going to tack on your potential rental income. Mm-hmm. And that just opens you up to a huge increase in your shopping budget, right? So we were able to get this more expensive four unit, which allowed us to tap into higher rents in DC, which allowed us to increase our cash flow. And this is why I always suggest people to consider house hacking first as a way to get in, because there's so many benefits to it.
Definitely, definitely. And what was the purchase price and down payment on this property?
So I think we put like seven. You're asking me all these numbers. I'm like, I don't even remember.
Your rough estimates.
I think it was like 17,000 down. Mm-hmm. But we made that back like within the first 6 months. So
wow.
It's a good opportunity to house hack. I definitely suggest it for anyone who is looking to get started and feels like there's a huge barrier to entry. Consider that.
Definitely, definitely. So the purchase price is probably like in the 400s.
Oh no, double that.
Oh, got it. So 800.
Yeah, because we put 3.5% down. So I'd have to get my calculator out.
Cool. No worries.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's great. And what was the mortgage roughly on that one and the cash flow?
So the mortgage is about $5,000, just because when you put less than 20% down, you have to pay mortgage insurance, which is pretty expensive on a loan that large. So it's about $5,000, and then after paying the mortgage, we're cash flowing about $7,000. Yeah.
A month?
A month, yeah, because the rents are $4,000, $3,000, and $2,600.
So. Wow. What are these two are the two Muncie families in the same area of DC?
No, they're in completely different quadrants of DC. So yeah, the four unit, the rents are really high. Like one of the units gets $4,000, one unit gets $3,000, the other two units get $2,600. So it's a lot. That's why I say eight units in DC is very different
than
eight units somewhere else. So you can't look at like my retirement story and mimic it. You have to do what's best for where you live and what your money goals are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And did you have to do a lot of work on the other units that you weren't living in?
Not really. I mean, they were move-in ready. They just weren't like really modern. So we just kind of slow rolled it. We did the immediate things first. And as things started breaking down, like the HVAC, actually like two HVAC systems went dead on us within like a 2 month period, which was super expensive.
Yeah.
But that's why you have to have reserves. You have to have savings to do this. We just kind of slow rolled it over the years.
Definitely. Definitely. Again, got started and just figured the rest out later. I really like the fact that you two kind of just hopped on deals and worked it out and figured it out. For that down payment, was it just kind of just savings after that you, the way that you funded that?
Savings, but also rental income from the duplex. Yep, yep. We use that, you know, the money from Airbnb and put it on there.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's amazing. When you said 7,000, I was like, whoa, you know, because mm-hmm. a lot of people who live in primary markets like DC, New York, LA, cash flow is kind of foreign. So can you talk more about, I guess, kind of the misconceptions and the importance of actually running the numbers and not assuming you're out of the game just because you live in a primary market and you want to invest there?
What do you mean out of the game?
So a lot of people assume that, you know, if I live in New York, if I live in LA, there's no cash flow, there's no deals, I can't invest where I live. Clearly, you know, you're in DC, which is known as a pretty expensive market. You still have you have excellent cash flow on your properties. So I guess what I'm asking is, can you talk about the importance of people actually running numbers and doing their research and not assuming that something is not possible where they live?
Well, we got in DC at a really good time. Now in DC, it's really, really hard to find a really affordable property, but I do have coaching clients who have been able to, but they have looked for months and they've been really diligent. Yeah. There are deals out there, but if you live in a really expensive market, I would suggest at this point, like thinking about investing out of state, still look where you live and just really hit the ground running, get you a really good agent. There's some tactics you can use to find like off-market deals that could really be at a great price point. But if that doesn't work, I really suggest looking in more affordable markets like Jacksonville, Florida, Cleveland, Ohio, Detroit. Think about wherever you went to college, like your college town. Are there, you know, houses outside of campus you can invest in? Like, don't let living in an expensive market get you stuck.
Absolutely. I agree. And do you self-manage or you have a property manager?
We've always self-managed. Yeah, I think if we had like more units, we may think of property management, but for us, it just didn't make sense.
Definitely. And so can you talk about the realities of self-managing? You know, a lot of people, some just want to outsource everything, which is fine, but others assume self-management is going to be this nightmare and you're going to be unclogging toilets and fixing the roof and all that stuff. So can you talk more about what your experience has been like self-managing, just, you know, the good, bad, and ugly?
Yeah, I think it depends on your level of comfort. Like, if I was doing this by myself, I'm not very handy. Thankfully, I have my husband. So self-managing for us looks a certain way that it may not if you're not handy, right? So, and then I will say, think about your property. So our properties are very different. We have one that's like relatively old. So things are going to break there more often. We'll get calls about that property more than the others. Think about your tenants. Are your tenants more self-sufficient? Are they, you know, a little more needy where they're going to call you if a light bulb is out? So it just really depends. Like, there are units that we have that we never hear from the tenants ever, ever, ever. And we'll go over there randomly one day and they're like, hey, we just planted like new landscaping and like, we just did a flower garden for you. And we also replaced the carpet, like just random stuff. Like, they're improving our property. So it just really depends on your tenants, your property. But I know a lot of investors who would never self-manage. They always want that barrier because it does kind of get to a point where it's hard to draw a line. This is a business, but here you are with a personal relationship with your tenants and you might hear a sob story about money one month and like trying to make sure you're really putting that guard up to where you're like, okay, yes, I'm a person, but this is a business, like, you know.
Definitely. And speaking of tenants, how do you screen your tenants? What is your strategy to make sure you get the ideal tenant?
There's so many different things you can do. Background checks, credit checks, call previous landlords. For us, the interview is very important, really seeing the person and kind of getting a vibe for how they are. Did they show up late? Are they on time? Like, that really sets the tone for how they're gonna, you know, treat you and your property. Even with our Section 8 tenants, we have the ability to go and look at their current residence. residence before they move into ours. How are they keeping up the place they live now? So that's really important. But yeah, I would say the interview is extremely, extremely important.
Definitely. Definitely. And can you talk more about Section 8? I do believe there are a lot of misconceptions about Section 8. I actually learned probably a couple of weeks ago what it actually is. So can you talk more about, you know, Section 8, what the process is like to get a Section 8 tenant, the benefits and the reality of having a Section 8 tenant?
So misconception that like all Section 8 tenants are bad, and that's not the case. You can, and then here's the thing too, there are so many different Section 8 vouchers. Like in DC alone, there's a few different voucher programs. There's a voucher program for veterans, for disabled individuals, for people who were previously homeless. Like there's so many different programs. You have to really figure out which program you're gonna cater to or what have you. But not all Section 8 tenants are bad, I will say that. You just have to really screen.
definitely. Which program do you use?
We use a few different ones. In DC, there's a program called Rapid Rehousing. We've also used a program for disabled veterans. But yeah, there's a few different ones.
Definitely. Would you say there's a preference? You have a preference, or you kind of just open to whichever is the best tenant?
Oh, no, we have no preference. It's illegal to discriminate. So okay. Yeah, anyone can apply. We just figure out who's the best fit for us, but no preference.
Definitely. Can you talk to us more about the benefits of marriage and being with someone who you're aligned with and can work towards these goals? What I've noticed is in just previous interviews and just looking on Instagram and everything, there's a trend, especially with our community, a lot of people who are doing great things are married. And so I'd like for you to talk more about how that's helped the both of you work towards this real estate, work towards building your real estate empire.
Yeah. So thankfully, when my husband and I played that game, cash flow, and we got the idea to invest, I'm thankful that we both got bitten by the real estate bug together, and we both like got addicted to it together. And it wasn't like, okay, one person wants to do it, the other person doesn't, because I hear that story a lot. So we love real estate. Like it's our thing now. But I want to say for anyone who's listening that is single, I want to encourage you that you can still do this by yourself. And 95% of my students and coaching clients are single women, and they are out here killing it. Like I have students who are buying 4-unit apartment buildings by themselves as single women. So yes, being married and having those two incomes is a great advantage, but you can still do this by yourself. And when you do get married, how much sweeter will it be when you come to the table with real estate and then y'all can go kill the game together?
Right. That's awesome. And can you, how's the transition been to both of you kind of doing this full time?
It's been amazing. Actually, we just had a baby girl 3 months ago.
Yes, I saw that. Congrats.
Thank you. So now we just have like unlimited time. We can make our own schedule. We can really pour into our daughter. When, you know, after I had her, I didn't have to worry about going back to work. I think that's a struggle for a lot of moms, and I'm really grateful that my husband and I, we both, you know, can be there and really see her grow and nurture her. So that's been awesome. I think the biggest adjustment is like sticking to a schedule, since we don't have to really be anywhere at any certain time. but yeah, it's been good.
That's awesome. What is your day-to-day look like? Just, you know, with the new baby and everything you have going on, I'm sure it's different every day, but what are some things like you do every day just to continue growing your business?
So yeah, it is so sporadic. I don't even know, because I'm still in the early stages of motherhood where sleep is like, I don't even know what sleep is. I really don't know. So I have no idea, but I, lots of diaper changes, lots of lots of snuggles, and things like this, podcast interviews. I do workshops. I just got back from San Diego. I flew out there for literally one day to speak to a group about real estate investing. I was in Atlanta a couple weeks before that doing a real estate mastermind. So I just love like pouring into people and allowing people to learn from my mistakes.
Definitely. Definitely. And what has been your most challenging tenant experience over the years?
Ooh, that is a good one. Most challenging tenant experience. I will say when we bought this 4-unit, we inherited tenants. It already had tenants in it. And we were house hacking, so we lived in one unit. The other three were already rented out with tenants. They were not the best characters you've ever met. We didn't vet these tenants. These tenants were already here at the property, and we had to go through the process of putting them out because they were doing some unsavory things. And so we had to put out tenants while living in the property. So it's like putting out someone that knows where you live. It was tough, but we survived. I will say that some people who house hack don't let the tenants know they're the owners. We had let them know, so they knew exactly who we were. Some people will say they're a tenant. Some people will say they're a property manager, like a live-in property manager. Mm-hmm. But we actually had to like put people out that knew where we slept at night.
Right.
So, yeah.
Definitely. And what was your biggest fear jumping into real estate, and how did you overcome it?
I really don't remember feeling any fear. The thing about me is I'm never afraid to bet on myself. I just feel like, and especially from what I know now with real estate, once you own something, if your plan A does not work out, there's so many other things you can do. Like just owning is so powerful in itself. Ownership gives you options. And I just, for me, I just know that I'm going to figure it out. And once your money's on the line, once you've invested, I don't care if you invested $5,000 or $50,000, you're going to figure it out. So I really don't remember feeling any fear. And I think that's why we were able to jump in so quickly, because it's like, look, we're going to do this. And that's where people get stuck, is that fear. But you bet on yourself, educate yourself, definitely. Like, don't do anything crazy, but bet on yourself.
Absolutely. We didn't get to touch on this. Can you talk more about the condo purchase?
Yeah, so that was actually an off-market deal. Someone, like a friend of a friend, was like, hey, my friend is selling this condo. And the price was just insane. It was $45,000. It already had a tenant in it paying $1,250. So that return is amazing. So it was kind of a no-brainer. It didn't need any work. It already had a tenant in it who wanted to stay long term. So we bought it and started making money immediately. So that was that.
Wow. What was the cash flow on that one?
So we bought it cash, so there's no mortgage, but there's a
condo fee. That's right.
Yeah, there's a condo fee of $297.
Oh wow. So that's pretty much like $1,000 a month. That's awesome. Was that the one in Maryland?
Oh yeah, in Baltimore. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay, Baltimore. Well, speaking of Baltimore, that's something else I'd like to talk about too. So, Baltimore, of course, is one of those places that people just say a lot of bad things about, and just so happens, I believe, to be where a lot of our community lives. Can you talk more about the realities of Baltimore? I mean, I see on Instagram especially, there's a lot of people doing some awesome work in Baltimore. Is that somewhere where you're considering like growing your business and get more property?
Baltimore is an amazing place to invest. I mean, you do need to know a little bit about the city to figure out where it's best to invest for you. But like where our condo is in Baltimore, it's really way out. Like it's still in Baltimore proper, but it's kind of out in the more suburban feeling area of Baltimore. So I will say people have this view of Baltimore that it looks exactly like it looked on the wire, and that's all of Baltimore. That's not the case. Baltimore is a pretty dynamic city. There's different sides, there's different areas and things like that. But like I said, all these hoods and all these major cities are not going to be hood for long. And Baltimore is already changing so rapidly. So if you're trying to get in, you may want to get in soon while the prices are still good.
Definitely, definitely. And so where do you go from here? What are your plans to purchase more properties and grow that, and also grow your business, which we'll definitely dive into more detail too in a bit.
We're always looking. I mean, we're not like actively like searching and things like that, but we're always open to new deals. So once you, like I said, once you invest in real estate, it's addicting, and you know, you're always kind of open to purchasing more. But right now we're just kind of chilling out, enjoying our daughter, and just trying to get used to being a new parent. Yeah.
That's awesome. And do you foresee yourself kind of staying investing in the DMV area, or have you considered other markets as well?
Oh, we've definitely considered other markets, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which other ones have you had some interest in?
So we have, we've thought about Detroit. We have thought about both the towns where we went to undergrad. I went to North Carolina A&T State University. My husband went to South Carolina State. So we've thought about those markets. And then where my family is from in Hampton, Virginia, we've thought about that too, because there's a military base there.
Got it. Awesome. So I have a couple questions based on looking at your website, looking at your Instagram, and also some things we spoke about earlier in the interview. So one of the things you mentioned is that you had to change your financial habits and your views and your actions as it relates to saving. So can you talk about what some of those habits were and kind of what you did to improve those things and save more and just be better financially?
So one of the things I did to jumpstart my savings was I started doing this thing called the 52-week challenge. If you Google 52-week challenge and click on images, you'll see a little template. There's tons of them out there that kind of helps you start saving. That's what I did at first. But then saving is kind of like muscle. It's kind of like working out and getting stronger and stronger. So you have to kind of start baby steps and just grow along the way. But then I just started to tell myself, like, okay, building wealth is hard, especially if you're building wealth from the ground up, and it takes sacrifice. And that's not something I was doing before. I was not sacrificing anything. I was getting everything I wanted whenever I wanted it. My money, I made it, I'm going to spend it. So I had to kind of change my way of thinking. And that's like the first step in wealth creation, is your mindset. So
definitely. And, sacrifice, is definitely something that I believe is important. Sometimes it's hard to do, especially, just working, starting out, you see things, you want to buy them. But I think I believe your story and what you two have done over the years speaks a lot about sacrifice, especially house hacking as well. I'm sure that probably wasn't the most ideal thing initially, but you definitely reaped the benefit of it. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And you did also mention just different creative financing that you've used. So can you touch more on that? One thing in particular that was interesting to me was just the borrowing from retirement. That's something that I did, and I didn't know that was even possible. But I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and it kind of sparked some creativity in me, and I just started turning over everything and just looking at what I could do and where I could find money. So can you talk more about that and any other creative financing you may have used?
We didn't use too many different forms of creative financing, just mortgages, cash. And then, like I said, we had borrowed from the retirement for the down payment. Like some of my other real estate investor friends, they get super creative. Like if you follow Charm City Buyers or House Hunter 216 or Hood Estates, any of those folks, they have more, more creative strategies they've used.
Definitely. So as we wrap up here, we have a couple more questions. So I purchased your 90 day plan yesterday and kind of read through it. And I really like how actionable it is.
Oh,
and
wow.
there's progress and you can really map where you're going and just check off and make sure you're making progress. And there's resources, hyperlinks. I really like that. So can you talk to us more about the resources you have available and how people can connect with you and purchase some of your resources? I really appreciate that. You know, you've been successful, but you're also creating resources and a roadmap that people can follow. So can you talk more just about all of your services and products?
Yeah, so the action plan that you purchased, actually, I'm going to send you the link to share with your audience. And there's Perfect. A coupon code if anyone wants to purchase it and get it for only $10. The coupon is Take Action. And the action plan, it's a really awesome way if you are a checklist-oriented person and you want to make sure that you're taking the right steps, not missing anything. This is like literally everything I wish I knew when I started. Every mm-hmm. single step I wish I had known about. So that's that. It's an ebook. I also have like video courses, and I'm launching on November 6th my 6-week coaching program called the Buy and Hold Bootcamp. So anyone who wants to be a buy and hold investor, that's what I do as a landlord, buying properties and renting them out. If you want to get started, but you have no idea what to do, or you want that guidance along the way, this is 6 weeks of coaching with me. It also includes unlimited access to an online course and a private Facebook community. And I partner with this company called Roofstock, R-O-O-F-S-T-O-C-K, Roofstock. I partner with them so that anyone who joins this program gets $500 off any Roofstock property.
Wow.
So it's going to be super exciting. I am super excited for everyone who's joined so far. That all you can find all the information for everything I just said on my Instagram. So if you find me on Instagram at the Key Resource, just click the link in my bio and like everything is there. If you listen to this podcast, DM me, let me know you heard me here, and I cannot wait to chat with you guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much. And the last question I have, so I first heard you on the Minority Trailblazer podcast about a year ago. And one of the things you said, and something I've also seen on your page, is you are worthy of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me, I believe that's very powerful. Can you tell me more about that principle and how just kind of ingrained that in your mind has helped you along the way?
Yeah, like I said, growing up, no one ever really told me that. And I didn't know that as a young Black woman that I could be wealthy. It didn't even occur to me. And I want to spread that message to as many people as possible. When I talk to people about getting started with real estate, it's like everyone feels like there's this prerequisite to be wealthy first. And that's so not the case. You can literally start right now with what you have. You have everything you need inside of you to get started. And so I just want to let people know that, yeah, you're worthy of it. Like, yes, you, no matter what your past is or what your money habits were, you can build wealth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Kendra. This has been a great interview, a lot of actionable steps, and it's just helpful hearing your story and how things seemingly just changed in an instant when you decided to take action. And now you're able to retire from the 9-to-5 life, you and your husband, and work on your business and real estate and helping others. I believe that's very powerful. And it's just inspiring to see that you were able to do it and someone in our community was able to do it. That didn't come from a bunch of money. It wasn't a trust fund baby. So it definitely shows that it's possible. So I definitely appreciate you sharing with us and being so candid with us about your journey. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed chatting with you, and I hope that this was helpful to someone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to all of our listeners, definitely, definitely visit her website, visit her Instagram, support, purchase the courses. If you're just starting out, you know, she has so many things that can help you get started and to be organized. So definitely take advantage of that. Awesome. Awesome. Well, Kendra, thank you so much. It's truly, truly been a pleasure to connect with you. Thank you so much for tuning into the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. Look forward to connecting with you all soon.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're a maintenance supervisor for a commercial property, you've had to deal with everything from leaky faucets to flickering light bulbs. But nothing's worse than that ancient boiler that's lived in the building since the day it was built, 50 years ago. It's enough to make anyone lose their cool. That's where Grainger comes in. With industrial-grade products and dependable fast delivery, Grainger can help with any challenge, from worn-out components to everyday necessities. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.